The Antidote has Caleb Hiles here for a talk. Caleb, thanks so much for coming.
Of course, happy to be here.
I need to hear your creation story. When did you first get into making music?
Right. Well, making music, I guess the late 2000s, so like the noughts, as they say, I think, so like 2009-ish, and it was rudimentary on a grand piano that my dad has, messing around on the drum kit with a friend of mine who played guitar. We had a little band. That was like getting my hands on instruments. Now, I've been singing in choir and stuff like that since I was like 4 years old. Mm-hmm. So it's that's been a long time playing around with music, but actually creating it and stuff, that came a little later. And then actually doing it well, that came even later. So it's been a journey and a process, a learning process for sure.
You know, I'm going to try to say this in the nicest way possible, but all right, you're an oddity. I mean, okay, you're involved with so many styles of music. The surprising part is that you've recorded anime covers like mm-hmm. Naruto, Shippuden, Silhouette. Now, does that make you an obsessed anime fan?
I mean, I was at one point. That was like the main form of media I consumed was anime. Not as much these days, but it's still a kind of show I like to watch a lot is anime. So not as obsessed. I mean, I got older, you know, you get more interests, you get more responsibilities. You can't throw as much of your person and identity into one thing. At least in my case, life made it not that way. So I have lots of other interests now and it's pretty spread out.
You know, the big thing about Silhouette is that you sang it in Japanese. Now, mm-hmm. one of my kids studied Japanese in university and cool. found it a struggle, even though he's fluent in other languages. How difficult was it to sing the song?
Interesting. I would say everyone's going to have a different answer. And I would caveat right at the top that my answer is going to be not particularly informed. It's just my experience with it. I, too, tried to learn Japanese in college and also have on and off been trying to learn it. I don't find that speaking it is very difficult. The sounds you make in the Japanese language are not so different than the sounds you create when speaking English. For me, it's not really hard to speak. Now, to speak it well and to have it sound fluid, that part is harder, but I would say the most difficult part of Japanese when I've been learning it is the reading of it is particularly difficult because that's remembering what it all says. You know, there's over 1,000 kanji and about 300 that are used regularly that you just have to remember. I mean, what I compare it to people is I'm like, imagine if our alphabet of 27 letters, I hope I got that number right.
26, but that's okay.
26, right. Yeah, I came up with one secret one. Imagine if that was like multiplied five times. And then those characters all have meaning. The 300, the plus kanjis, they have meaning. And then when you put them beside each other, like you combine them, the order and the sequencing of kanji also changes the meaning. It transforms it. That part of it is ridiculous.
Well, personally, I'm going to pass on Japanese because I'm struggling with English as my first language.
I understand that too. It changes every day. It's a wonderful thing about language.
So you and I have touched on your past, but what we're really here to speak about is your latest album, The Darkness Before the Dawn.
Sure.
Is this the first time you've brought in a Christian faith view into your music?
Maybe not so explicitly, but certainly it's not something I've shied away from or hidden within my being out in public and on my YouTube channel. But also in my first album I wrote, In One Breath, there's fairly obvious spiritual themes and language woven throughout it. Without crossing into, I guess one would say, worship territory, where you're using Jesus and hallelujah and God frequently mm-hmm. in your lyricism, The Darkness Before the Dawn is obviously Christian as I've been with any of my original works.
That must have been important to you, because otherwise, why do it with the Christian message?
Yeah. I've had this conversation and this thought with several people that I trust about wanting to get your beliefs and your message out to an unbelieving audience in a way that will speak to them and introduce them or reacquaint them with or recontextualize their maybe preconceived notions or absence of knowledge of Christ and what it is to be Christian. But also not removing so much of the dialogue, the lyricism, that the truth of Christ and who he is, and to where it doesn't look like him anymore, and it doesn't look like being a Christian anymore. That was sort of the challenge with this album, for me at least, was how do I write lyrics that are true to my beliefs and true to my faith, but also allow people who do not believe what I believe, welcome them into this music and have them not feel ostracized or have them feel distant from the music. Like it's not written for them, because it is written for them as well.
And the thing is too, about the darkness before the dawn, you couldn't call it a happy release, because you get into serious topics like what's heard on Between the Truth and Lie, where it says, headlines, lies, deceiving my mind, truth on trial, barely holding on, seek out voices being cast down, somewhere between the truth and the lie, no compromise. But realistically, isn't that what society wants from us, to compromise? I mean, there's so many people who say that there is no absolute truth.
That's an incredible setup there. I think that's a difficult reality if we're talking, for being strictly a question of faith. I believe in an absolute truth. And in that regard, there is no compromise on the absolute truth of Christ and who he is. That being said, with Between the Truth and the Lie, I tend to have an issue with society over here in America. And I'm sure a lot of people can feel this way about communities they exist in, that it seems as though there's far and far less understanding, desire to understand, any sort of pursuit of knowledge or curiosity, knowledge of others' lived experiences and curiosity about that, with more animosity. So in some ways, Between the Truth and the Lie is sung from the perspective of the person who is desperately trying to find what is the absolute truth, both in one's faith, in their spirituality, but also trying to find a truth in a world that seems to, especially in the nation I live in, that seems to push back against anybody desiring to figure out what the truth is, and to seek that in an honest way and not be met with animosity for it. Is a real problem that I've been running into in the past several years.
Why don't I make this personal? Was it easy for you to accept God's truth?
It was easy for me. I think maybe a bit too reductive to say, but I will say I think there's been peace in accepting God's truth, because the way in which I was raised and the environment I grew up in, the community I had, made it believable, because not only were they so convicted by what they believed, their actions were reflective of what they said.
Mm-hmm.
And that made it digestible, it made it believable, and it made it commendable and something to aspire to, because you saw the net positive it gave to everyone around them. And I speak explicitly of my parents in this regard. So talking the talk and walking the walk, that can be maybe the most convincing thing that you can experience for a belief system. And I find over my years of studying and learning and curiosity and pursuing truth, that God's truth has been one of the more healing and accepting and universal truth way of life that I've found. And I tell my children, and I tell everyone who doesn't believe, and those who do believe, that one of the ways in which I live is by God's fruits of the Spirit, to live every day with love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and gentleness and self-control. In a lot of ways, that now feels kind of radical to say.
Something I appreciate with you, Caleb, is that you seem to be just as at home doing hard vocals as singing lighter stuff. One standout for that is Idolize. But is there one vocal style that you feel more comfortable with?
Well, my voice certainly feels more comfortable with soft things in terms of just the wear and tear and fatigue on the voice. But I'm also not particularly a super skilled vocalist. I've self-taught. I've done some lessons, and I should really do more, because the few I have done have been immediately beneficial. You learn a lot. There's basic stuff that anyone can do that will just help you tremendously. But I do love the softer sounding songs and softer vocals and a little more musical theater, a little more legato, and it's not as intense. I grew up with musical theater, so that's more or less my predisposition for singing. But in middle school and high school, I became friends with a bunch of metalheads. So I started listening to like Megadeth and Metallica and Slayer and Nevermore and Slipknot. So it was, and that was worked into my already like literally going and watching like, you know, The Secret Garden and HMS Pinafore and Guys and Dolls and Phantom of the Opera. So it was like the weird little intersection of interests that happened all at once around that time.
Well, now I have to ask you, why didn't you turn this album into a rock opera?
You know, there's other albums on the horizon. Like, I'm still working. So like that very well might happen at one point or another. I would love to do something like that. Some of my favorite bands are sort of rock opera people. In fact, one of them's from Canada, Marianas Trench, Canadian-based band. Super rock opera kind of a band. It's just like a soundtrack theatrical style, and it's incredible. So who knows? I may do something like that in the future. That would be phenomenal. But this time around, when working with the label, there's a direction that we wanted to go, and we just shot for that target. So who knows? Maybe other projects.
Well, you and I have already spoken about you being a great vocalist, and you are.
Well, thank you.
But on The Darkness Before the Dawn, you brought in a ridiculous number of guests. Trevor of Thousand Foot Crutch, Ashes Remain, Manifest, Adelaide's Way are just a few of those. You have to be honest about this. Were they brought in to help your popularity or because you really wanted their voices?
That's a fantastic question. There's an interesting intersection in that conversation between working with a label and commercial viability, and then your poetic license, you know, or your artistic integrity, and the pursuit of trying to meld those two together. And when I started with Judge and Jury, the label, one of the things they asked me right at the top was, if there's people you want to work with, you let us know and we'll do our best. And I sent them a list of people that I was very interested in working with. They didn't immediately go through that list and say, oh, wait, we can, we can't, we can, we can't, we can, we can't. But they came back to me with some people that they knew, and they said, do you have any interest in working with these artists? Some of them I knew and was familiar with. Ashes Remain, Lacey Sturm, Trevor McNeven. Those were ones I knew, and I'd listened to their music when I was younger. That was, like I said, into metal music, kind of all adjacent, new metal, hard rock, alternative. So this was very familiar space. And then the other ones I actually wasn't as familiar with, Manifest and Adelaide's Way. Those were people I was not familiar with during that period of time. I listened to their music and was seeing if I was vibing with it, and if they were going to be on my song, were they going to be okay with whatever message I was wanting to sing about. Ultimately, both desires were fulfilled. There's a commercial viability that they brought to the project, and then there's the artistic integrity that was satisfied through their inclusion. Especially with writing an explicitly Christian faith-based album, having people who have been in the space and in this genre for so long be willing to sort of put their name on the project and bring their prowess and their knowledge, their experience to it was invaluable for the integrity of the album, but also for commercial viability. It was really important. So when trying to get my name out there, quote unquote, beyond just my YouTube, which is what I'm mostly known for, you want to try to put your best foot forward in a way to try to move beyond people's preconceived notions about what you are about and what you have done before. So that was our thinking going into it.
And I appreciate you bringing in some Canadian talent on this. Trevor and Manifest. It's an honorary Canadian album now.
Nice. Hey, you know what? Totally fine by me. 100% fine with me.
You spoke about Lacey Sturm. She came in on Darkness Before the Dawn, the title track. That song sounds like something that Flyleaf could have done. So did that band inspire it?
Well, what's funny is the composition for that song I was working on for a separate project, completely unrelated to anything new metal, alternative hard rock. It was actually for a sort of Dungeons and Dragons bardic musical that I was working on as a side project, and I came up with the composition of the song. Now, a composition and an arrangement are different things. Mm-hmm. And when Judge and Jeremy and I started working together on the album, and my partner in crime, Jonathan Young, whom I've worked with a ton on YouTube, as well as really helped with this album, we laid out pretty much all of my ideas that I've had over the years. And we were in a recording session, and this was the last idea of the night, and we put it into the digital audio workspace. We had been recording a lot of punk, pop, new metal rock that day as demo tracks, and so we're already in that headspace. And so hearing that opening lick that I originally played on a piano, Jen John translated that to a guitar, put a simple sort of chuggy riff underneath it to support it, and then played that lead line over the top of it. It was like, oh, this sounds like something that Flyleaf or Skillet would write. Mm-hmm. And we just ran with it. So it wasn't even meant for this design, but when you get into the studio and you're arranging, you can make a lot of ideas become something that they weren't originally intended to be.
Well, it's not just the music that's great about Darkness Before the Dawn, the song. It also has a great message. I pray for a change to begin inside, for the courage to not run and hide. Is it shame? Is it fear that controls my mind? You need to tell me, is that coming from personal experience?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Feels like every day, every week, every month, there's some sort of new thing that we have to face, and adversity or difficulty, challenge that, you know, sometimes we have no control over its involvement in our life. You know, we didn't ask for it. We didn't seek it out. It just happened. And a lot of the sort of pondering over what's my motivation. You know, I tend to have an avoidance problem. I avoided a lot of problems in my life when I was younger. And I have a tendency to put off or to sidestep issues. A lot of times compartmentalizing as well, mm-hmm. any sort of feelings I might have. And this is one of those songs where opportunities to talk about where those have been proven to be not helpful. They've been detrimental, and not just to myself, but the people I care about around me. Writing it, it wasn't a song meant necessarily to be like, all right, we're about to win. We're about to defeat the monster or the difficulty that we're facing. Here we go. Let's pick up our swords. It was meant to be more about a song kind of when you're in the middle of trying to reconcile that you're really struggling with whatever challenge or hardship that you have. That's why it's talking about, I pray for a change to begin, you know, the courage to not run and hide. It's like you're asking for things that you lack. The song is about starting from a place of lacking, but also understanding that you really can't stop it. Like you're in the middle of a torrential downpour or in a waterfall, and it's just going to keep going. And all you really have is a prayer for to meet whatever is about to happen and that is happening and survive it.
So the album does have a few style changes. It goes from mostly harder tracks to some that are a bit softer, like Just One Step. And the song speaks about not wanting to quit, even when you get in over your head. Here's the question. Couldn't that also apply to you as a performer?
Yeah, I absolutely think that could apply to being a performer. You know, Just One Step, it was the very first song we wrote for the album. Just started working with the label. And I think we were trying to figure out what they wanted from me and what I could offer. Just One Step came out of those first writing sessions where what was on my mind in a lot of ways was I struggle with a desire and ambition. Something my wife and I talk frequently about is I'm not much of a dreamer. I don't have a lot of goals. It's good to be content, but if you stay in contentment, it can really sit into complacency. I tend to be that way in a lot of ways. My upbringing made me, for various numbers of factors, it really made me settle a lot for either the fact that I wasn't very good at much. I barely passed high school, middle school, high school, college, you know, just kind of making it by. The idea that to try to strive for more, go on some big journey to be, you know, bigger than oneself, quote unquote, or larger than life wasn't something I ever did. And when I got the opportunity with YouTube and having a career in entertainment, you know, it's never, ever left my mind that it can end, you know, at any time. I've been so fortunate to be able to do this with some economic viability for almost a decade. What's the next great artistic pursuit I can do? What's the thing that's truest to me? What's the truest message I can send? And I feel like I have that same mentality for any job I have, but it's a little different because the job I have and the platform I have, I feel there's more to be said and there's more that I should be doing within it. And I've felt that way for a long time. In one way, the song for me, Just One Step, could apply in the way of, as a performer, just don't quit. Just keep going. It's good to dream. It's good to aspire. It's good to reach for more in any circumstance, because not only does it give a lot to you, but it really can give a lot to others. And I've been surrounded by people with great ambitions and great artistic pursuits and great knowledge and great perseverance. And it's like, I want to be those things, but you can't be those things if you don't just start. And removing the roadblocks that keep you from starting.
Well, you certainly weren't being complacent or just going with the flow by putting out this album. And one thing about it too, I've just been curious, how long was it from start to finish, from concept to completion?
The whole album took from late 2021 till late 2024 to be written. And that wasn't because we were working every day or, you know, I was slaving over composition and lyrics, or our label and producers and engineers were just taking so much time. We are all pretty good at what we do, and they are just as professional as they can get. That was just life for all of us involved. And I would imagine it won't take as long to do another album. This one in general was the label trying to navigate having a YouTube artist on their roster and how I fit in with that and how to best marry that audience that I have with a new direction for me and the music I want to write.
Caleb, you hooked up with Ashes Remain on The Memory. I appreciate a line from the song that says, "It's your shot to take, be the change. You want to see the world around you. All it would take to be free is to rewrite the memory." That's the part I struggle with, because I've always thought of memories as being static. Are you saying that they're not with us forever?
Interesting. You thought memories were static.
It's a snapshot of history.
Right, right. Yeah, in some ways, it is a snapshot of history. Two things, and I'll try to, maybe even more than that, but I'll try to get around to it. In one way, I remember when we were working on this song, in some ways I struggled with the line, rewrite the memory, because I don't necessarily like the idea that some might interpret the chorus and the line, rewriting one's memory, as a denial of things that have happened to yourself, happened to you, especially because, you know, the song talks so much about our own mental anguishes and our lived experiences weighing upon us and impacts our present because it was our past. I don't want rewriting of something to be this, to be understood as a denial of those things. So when working on the lyrics and starting from that chorus, it was important for me for the verses and the bridge to make sure that it did not encourage a denial of what's happened to us, but rather that you don't have to be defined by what has happened to you and how you view it, even in a place where it might not be healthy of what's happened to you. If you don't view it in a healthy way and it's destructive, that doesn't have to define who you are right now. But yeah, as a general thing, I think memories are, they're a snapshot, but I'm sure you've had many, many experiences. It's amazing how much a memory can mean so much more over time. And even though, to your point, even though the snapshot is static, the impact it has on you is fluid, is ever changing, and it can be negatively or positively. It's just fascinating how that is. And in that way, I don't know if the memories are static. I mean, the event never changed, right? The creation of the memory itself, but how one feels about it, that's the thing that changes.
Mm-hmm. We do have one last song that we need to speak about. You close the darkness before the dawn with Manufactured Heart. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest, I find that song depressing. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should tell us what inspired you to write it.
It is a little depressing. Yeah. The whole album ending out on the line, what is left worth saving?
Right.
Sometimes that's how I feel, is this idea that maybe the human race was a mistake. I forgot the book. I forgot the verse. But there is a portion in the Bible where God is debating about wiping out all of humanity. And he has to be convinced to not do it. And I think about that every now and then. It's not unique to dwell upon how wonderful and beautiful humanity can be, to compare that with how depraved humans can also be. This song really leans into, I think, at least in the nation I live in America, a good portion of our system's run naturally bends us more towards self-indulgent, disposable, consumer mindset, behavior, and mm-hmm. lifestyle. And that is, in a lot of ways, antithetical and also works against our Christian beliefs and the lifestyle we're supposed to live. Yeah, that's essentially what the album is about, and sort of contemplating the idea that if that is all to be true, it can be depressing. To your point, depressing.
Well, the album has been out for a few months now, so you must have heard some responses to it. How has the album affected your listeners?
Yeah, the album's sort of found a little contingent of people that aren't associated with my YouTube career, which was kind of by design. I was hoping, of course, that my base audience would enjoy it or at least give it a chance. But when trying to hit this target of writing a hard rock, metal adjacent, alternative Christian record, that is the target we're going for. And the hope is to catch those people that would like that kind of music and have them be brought into the fold of what I'm making and my career as it relates to this original music. So the response I've received from them has been very positive. A lot of people feel that it's nostalgic, that it's sort of a throwback to the music of the 2000s. And in some ways, it absolutely is. It's what I grew up with. The people who were featured on the album would also tell you that that's very much what it's influenced by. My YouTube audience has also responded really well to it. I've really appreciated their willingness to come into it and listen to it. And I have a huge audience of people that are not Christians, that do not share the faith that I have. But my community, if you can call it that, has always been one of understanding and acceptance. And they show that to me as much as I show it to them. And their willingness to listen to my music, understanding who I am as a person and what I believe. I really appreciate their effort in that regard.
Well, I've certainly been appreciating it. The Antidote has been joined by Caleb Hiles. It's been great to have you here. Thanks for coming.
Of course. It's been great talking with you. Thank you for such thoughtful questions that made me have to pause for a very long time to have to think about it. I really appreciate that.